Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Why, hello there, podlets. Ben Shires here again, which can only mean one of two things. Either you've made the exceedingly sensible decision to download episode 3 of the Dave Weekly Leicester Festival specials. Or you're having a hyper-realistic episode in which you've imaginatively recreated the opening of your favourite comedy podcast from the darkest recesses of your mind. Whichever is the case, firstly, let me commend you on your great taste. And secondly, if I do happen to be a mere figment of your imagination, a fantasy, if you will, thanks for having me, I really am nothing more than a grateful hallucination. Coming up on today's podcast / daydream, it's the love episode, as we've got a hunky lineup of Valentine Lotharios to tickle your romantic desires and massage your funny bones. First up is Alan Davies of QI, Jonathan Creek and delightfully floppy hair fame, who drops in to discuss Valentine's gigs, aging comics and all the funny bits in between. Then to round off our romantic reverie, we bring you Comedy Blind Date, which does exactly what it says on the tin. If you could put three lovelorn comedians in a tin and make them humorously compete for the affections of a young woman. Anyway, here's Alan. Okay, we're pleased to be joined on the Dave Weekly today by Alan Davies. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you.
Excellent. And we're currently situated in Leicester's De Montfort Hall, a fine building, and you have a dressing room which perhaps doesn't reflect the outside of the building so much.
Dressing room too. Salubrious, isn't it?
You're the only person on tonight, aren't you?
I don't know who's in dressing headlining. Room. I've got a feeling my tour manager might have taken dressing room one for himself.
It's palatial in there. I've seen it's gilt lined everywhere.
Might have to have a word about that.
Mm. But they've laid on a very nice spread, which we've been admiring.
If you like Maltesers, I do.
Yeah, it's no coincidence. There's a definite Malteser bias on the sweet selection. But no, that's good. Well, today as well is a day for chocolates, meaningful or not, because it's Valentine's Day.
It is Valentine's Day today. Yeah, it is.
Thank you for deigning to spend the time with the Dave Weekly.
I'm expecting a particularly loved up audience. Well, or maybe they'll all just be very bitter single people.
Mm. Well, I mean, what's the demographic like on a Valentine's night? Is it going to be all couples?
I've absolutely no idea.
No. I mean, it's a weird thing to contemplate, isn't it, really, that some people will have chosen to come see you talk as a means of perhaps wooing someone.
He probably thought it would be a laugh.
Yeah.
Go out and be a laugh.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you?
You know, it's easy, isn't it? It's not going to be grubby.
I mean, if you put on a Barry White CD, you'd expect that would lead to some kind of perhaps intimate knowledge by the end of it. But
would you really?
Well, any situation. I just like to bring a speaker onto a train and hope for the best. But, I mean, would you consider yourself an aphrodisiac?
Absolutely. The evidence is clear.
Yeah, you're touring your new show, Life is Pain.
Yeah, well, I have been. I've been everywhere. And I'm finishing the tour this weekend at London's famous Hammersmith Apollo, with the now obligatory DVD recording.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done 50, 60 dates around the UK, Edinburgh Festival. Just been to New Zealand, a tour of New Zealand, which went very well. And I've been to Australia, I did a gig in Sweden.
Good.
And one in Dublin. 5 countries I've done.
Wow.
It's virtually a world tour.
It is.
I'm a bit like John Bon Jovi.
Rocking
and
out.
And he's never, as far as I know, he's never filled St Albans Arena twice. Twice. 2 nights.
Step up to the plate, Bon Jovi.
Yeah, come on.
I always thought someone's missed a trick not doing a tribute act to John Bon Jovi on the ukulele and calling it Banjovi. I thought that would be a great...
Yeah.
No. Maybe that's why. Maybe that muted response is why it's not really ever taken off.
It's only muting because it took me a moment to work it out. But now I've worked it out, I can see it's an hilarious idea.
Yeah, yeah. I think
maybe
it's definitely got legs.
So try again. Throw me it again.
I think it's had its day.
Yeah.
I think it peaked.
Banjo brand.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. There's so much scope
Banjo
for it.
Pasquale. Actually, Banjo Pasquale.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd get a lot of likes
as a
Facebook page.
Mm. Yeah, people. I think I can see people get behind that.
You take the roof off Facebook.
So your show is Life is Pain.
That absolutely.
Doesn't sound like the ideal comedy subject matter.
I thought at the time, I thought it was quite ironic. And then I realised it sounds like a talk about suicide culminating in an actual suicide.
It kind of sounds like the show that a 16-year-old would write. I'm going to write a comedy show. It's going to be called Life is Pain.
Yeah. Now you mention it, maybe it is a bit juvenile. No, it's worked out okay. I mean, it comes from an anecdote about a little girl who says that to her mum. She was being told off. She turned to her mum. She said, "Life is pain." And I was told that story, and I thought it was hilarious. And I put it down in a list of potentially funny things to talk about in my new stand-up show and made it the title. And actually, it turns out to be one of the least funny moments in the show. But at the same time, it's one I like.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I thought it was quite a nice title.
You say you've been all over the world. Have you taken a
five countries?
Yeah, five countries.
Only 199 to go.
I mean, we don't know how many. Exactly. The UN is constantly arguing over how many countries
I think it's 204. But as you know, as obviously that will be wrong. My track record on QI would tell you that would definitely get a klaxon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for all we know, countries might have been wrong classified. There might only
be
six in the world.
Does it include Northern Cyprus? Is Northern Cyprus recognised?
Exactly. And there's lots of principalities like Sealand off the coast of the UK, which is basically just an old oil refinery or something, which
really?
Has been commandeered by a group of people who've proclaimed themselves it's been sort of removed from the jurisdiction of the UK, and they produce their own coinage and everything.
Is there a theatre there?
As soon as I said coinage, you should have seen Alan's eyes
flicker. Has it got a venue?
Flicker.
Got their own currency. What's the exchange rate?
Hello, Sealand. No, unfortunately, the prince...
It's good to be back.
Throw your hands up if you were born here. Oh, yeah, that's right. You've got six hands. It's a very small community. But yeah, I was going to say, you've played five countries. Have you played France? Because in France, your show might take on a very different meaning because it would be Life is Pain. Life is pan. Life is bread.
Life
which is
bread.
A much... I can connect to that. I think life is much more central to bread than it is perhaps to pain.
La vie est pan. There you go. It's next year's tour sorted. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure meeting you. You've proved most useful. There used to be a gig in Paris that you could do in the 90s. No, an English-speaking gig, and they used to take people over there, and you'd do your act, and they didn't get it. And then they thought they turn up. Of course, English, I can speak this. They haven't got a clue. They've got no idea. Your Swedes get everything.
Mm.
Everything. They can speak proper English better than us. Much better than us.
He's said like a true.
They speak better. They're better English. They're better dressed.
Mm.
Place is cleaner.
Yeah.
I'm not going for it.
Yeah, it's like England if we stopped drinking so much.
Yeah, if we sorted ourselves out.
Well, they've got sort of strict codes on when you can drink and...
I thought you were going to say immigration laws.
When, yeah, damn right. No, I think they just the way that they look at life is...
No Danes.
Yeah, exactly. They're very sceptical of the other Scandinavians there.
Oh, they're terrific. They love stand-up.
Mm.
And there's quite a few people going over there now.
Yeah, yeah.
Eddie Izzard, of course, who loves... doing a gig in a foreign town.
Yeah, well, you can speak to a Swede as you could speak to an English person. They understand the nuance of the language. It's not just they understand the language as it's written down. And I think that's more comedy.
I have slowed it down a bit, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, sure, a lot of them are a little bit thick. That's fine. That's just the Swedes in general.
Just wanted to... You've got to separate the words.
Yeah.
Once you start running them together, it's harder to follow.
Mm.
That's true also in the East Midlands.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hello, Leicester.
Yeah. Hello, beat Leicester. Mm. Give them a chance.
Yeah, sound out the words. Yeah. Give him something it rhymes with.
Give him a chance. Don't take the piss.
So, I mean, you've had a break, which you sort of admit in your even in your tour blurb. From stand-up for a long time, about a decade.
Yeah, very long
so.
Time. I didn't expect to be away from stand-up so long. I fell out of love with it a bit, especially the touring side of things. I organise the tour a bit better now because I've got two small children, so I do a few gigs, go home, can go back and forth like that. So it's not relentless night after night. And I go do much less of it by car because the motorways are really depressing. But trains, I like trains.
Very relaxing.
Much prefer. So it's been more fun, actually. And also, the last time I toured, I was doing about three other things at once and trying to, you know, be ambitious and career-minded. And I've given that up now.
So you've actually been, like, your first gig was in 88, there or thereabouts.
Yeah, 25 years ago.
25
years. Almost to the day.
Is it weird to think that a lot of the people in tonight's audience won't have been born in 1988?
A little bit. A little bit weird, yeah.
But it's also, it speaks of your longevity. I know you're a fan of lots of the classic comedians, the Bill Cosbys and the Connollys and all that sort of, the bunch of people who've been performing for ages and still continue to perform or did perform up until a very, you know, kind of late sort of stage.
Yeah, I think that's, I think it is something where you do improve as you get old. I mean, you just have a lot more life experience and you can speak with more authority in all stages of life. So if you're someone like Bill Cosby, you can speak about being a parent and a grandparent and you can talk about relationships in the long term. You can talk to everybody in the room. Whereas, you know, if you're 30, anyone over 30 thinks you don't know anything. And even if 46, as I am now, people over 50 think, yeah, all right, wait till you get to my age. No, but when you've got a real senior person, you know, and I saw Dave Allen, he was in his 60s, he was just blisteringly funny, and there's no one in the room who could claim more life experience, you know.
So is that the key? You've got to be the oldest man in the room at any gig.
Pretty much, yeah, that certainly was the George Burns philosophy, I think. But I do think that, he certainly got stronger, and Cosby was amazing when I saw Cosby. And he just got a standing ovation after 2.5 hours. I mean, a genuine standing ovation from everyone in the Albert Hall.
And 2.5 hours as well. I mean, most comedians are hard-pushed these days to do more than about an hour.
Most of them shouldn't do more than that. It's very important that you don't go on too long.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
Certainly not longer than your jokes last.
Yeah, otherwise it's just a ramble, really, isn't it? It's just a diatribe.
Yeah.
So I was looking at some of the press that you've been doing surrounding the tour and everything, and a lot of it's great. It's great to see you back doing live stand-up because you've obviously rekindled your enthusiasm for it and sort of loving it. But I was on the Guardian website. You'd done an interview with them, and it was a very entertaining interview, but I couldn't help my eye being drawn to another article that had popped up in the sidebar of The Guardian, which is far less salacious than the Daily Mail sidebar, but still has some quite interesting stories. And there's a story at the moment, you might have seen this, about Chubby Checker, the rock and roller from the sort of the early 60s, who originated The Twist and lots of other things. He's actually suing an app company at the moment, a company who makes mobile apps, because they've done an app which is called the Chubby Checker, and you feed in a man's shoe size and it gives you an estimate of his penis length.
Right. That's next to my article.
That was in
a kind of, if you like this, you might also
the
like
eye
this.
Was drawn. Yeah, exactly. It was like in those Amazon suggested purchases.
People who read this also
If you read Jeffrey Archer, you might want to purchase this.
If you like
noose.
The story about this cock, you might like the story about this other cock.
Yeah, I mean, that's your inference, Alan, not mine.
No, maybe I am going
but
too
do you know
far.
How much his lawyers were suing them for?
A million.
Half a billion.
Half a billion?
Half a billion.
From an app company?
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to shut down the interweb.
Yeah, I don't know how many apps they presume
all our phones won't work one morning, and we think, oh, Chubby Checker one.
Chubby Checker sat on a landmine.
He's getting everyone's emails and texts now.
Yeah, that's it. Chubby Checker controls the world.
Controls it. They shouldn't have done that thing about his knob.
Yeah, I know. So, thanks for coming to chat to us, Alan. And I can't let you leave without mentioning Jonathan Creek, which a lot of people are fans of, and I'm one of them. And there's a new special coming out in Easter.
Easter, right? Yes. We have filmed that.
Excellent. And is there more to come after that?
I hope so. David Renwick's talking about writing more. So we might do some in the autumn, but until I'm actually on the set, I never quite believe it.
Yeah. One thing that I loved about Jonathan Creek, and from when I first saw it, was the theme tune, the Danse Macabre lists.
It's marvellous.
Classic,
fine piece of work.
Piece of music. But does it become to you that kind of... Because when I hear it, obviously now, I have a tingling to solve mysteries. Do you hear it so often that you kind of feel like, oh, it's Jonathan Creek music again?
I have to be careful because it's very catchy. And I have in the past found myself humming it whilst walking down the street.
Oh, no.
Which could, people might think I was trying to introduce myself.
Mr. Self-referential.
Yeah. Do a little sting as I go into a shop and then they look up and then I just wink or something.
Well, and point out some like otherwise unobservable coincidence, yeah. And then just leave.
Just turn up and they can hear the music and then I come in.
It is him. We knew it all along.
It really is too awful to think. But I've actually caught myself doing that and had to cut it off.
So I think the tip is, if you ever hear that, someone humming that in the background.
You usually hear me going, da-da-da-da. Oh, Christ.
Potentially on a train as well.
Shut up,
we
man.
Know where to find him. But Alan Davies, thanks for coming to chat to us. And
thank you.
Yeah, do check out your show. Anyone who's listening at 16th and 17th, is it?
Yeah, Hammersmith Apollo.
Hammersmith Apollo. Lovely theatre. A lovely show. Even if you're reluctant.
Yeah, you'll be turned.
That was Alan Davies, and this is Comedy Blind Date, which for copyright reasons is nothing like the original Blind Date. Although, if you could picture what that Blind Date used to be like, then add a short comedy set from each of the contestants to it beforehand, it's pretty much exactly that. All clear? Well, here's the contestants to introduce themselves, and of course, the fabulous David Morgan originating the role of Cilla Black. Hello, hello. We are in Dave's Comedy Curry House, as we've been before for the Leicester Comedy Festival, but tonight it's Valentine's night, and that can only mean one thing, Comedy Blind Date. It's pretty much, it's an uninspired title, I think we've all agreed on that, but it means one thing, it's Blind Date with an excess dollop of comedy. I'm here with David Morgan, who is our Cilla Black for tonight. Hello, David.
Hello, I'm very excited about being Cilla. I'm definitely going to sing the theme tune.
Could you give us a quick blast?
No, to wait and hear it. I need to save my voice.
Showbiz as ever, David Morgan leaves us wanting more. Can you reveal, at least for the people who won't be here, what you'll be wearing?
They've got me a lame gold sheepskin, not sheepskin, snakeskin jacket. It's horrible. Like, it's probably the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, Bette Lynch would turn it down. It's terrible.
Did anyone spot the lie in that sentence, they've got me? We all know that David provided it himself.
Seriously, I'm avoiding wearing it. I'm really trying to hide it. It's one of those, like, could you wear this? And you're like, no, I couldn't, because I have shame. It's horrible. But I'm going to wear it. It'll be fine. It's very fun. I'm not going to be as humiliated as the three men are tonight. That is going to be, it's going to be ball-breakingly awful for them.
And that's the take-home quote from a man who says he has shame. So there's another fib in there. Now, I'm joined by the three contestants, all looking more excited than the next. If I point the microphone at you, just introduce yourself as if you were contestant numbers 1, 2, and 3 and give us a little background. First up, contestant number one.
Hello, my name is Valdemar. I'm a Danish comedian and I'm right what you're looking for.
You don't need it. I'm not chatting you up, Valdemar.
I thought that's what we were doing. Come on.
It was more background rather than But
well, I'm a Danish comedian living in Copenhagen. I'm here doing a show for the weekend and trying to find a place to sleep tonight. So a bit of curry and a bit of curry. Yeah, that's what we're going for.
So that's Valdemar. That's number one. Moving on to number two.
Hello, my name is Ahir Shah. I'm also a Danish comedian living in Copenhagen. And so I find myself in much the same situation as Valdemar, vis-a-vis my homelessness.
And your need for curry?
And my need for curry is explained by the name Ahir Shah.
Oh, that's some self-referential goodness.
And where we can share a curry. Yeah.
Everyone's getting excited more for the curry than they are for the romance at the moment. Will contestant number three be any different?
Hello, my name's Josh Widdicombe. I'm
hey, what does that even mean? I don't know.
John Kearns here at the Ivy Chutney. I bought a new shirt for this. It's tight around the tits, but the gut is free. So I can have a lot of beer. I don't know what food goes to my... Anyway, I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a challenge. These two are... Ahir's got the silky voice, which I think works for a blind date thing. Mm-hmm. And Voldemort, he's just got the name, which is this... I mean, it already conjures just images of man and, you know, tearing a woman. What does that mean? But,
perhaps it's best that you don't win, John.
That's him. Me, John. John, that sums... What's that? That's spooning and, you know, soft hands. So, you know, that's fine.
Yeah. I feel like this is all prepared material, John. Don't waste it all now.
I wish my act was that good.
I mean, I also think it's quite tense. David Morgan's having a fit in the background.
I want him to call his next show Spooning and Soft Hands.
That's beautiful. So good luck, fellas, until then. And now, here's the show itself. And just to clear up any confusion, in the meantime, stuttering Romeo John Kearns has undergone a transformation that sees him assume the character of a foul-mouthed, buck-toothed, Franciscan monk wig-wearing catch of a man. At least, he tells me it's a character. Let the wooing commence. Oh, and tonight, the part of R. Graham, the voiceover man, will be played by me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this comedy blind debate! Playing Cilla Black tonight is your host, David Morgan!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. What we're going to do is we're going to play this as if it is blind date now, and we're going to reintroduce our bachelors. Bachelor number one, what's your name and where'd you come from?
John Streatham.
John from Streatham, and what do you do, John?
Is that a joke or...
I literally want to know. No, it's fine. Welcome, John. Ladies and gentlemen, John from Streatham. Bachelor number two, what's your name and where'd you come from?
My name is Valdemar. I'm from Copenhagen.
Valdemar from Copenhagen! Bachelor number three, what's your name and where's your significant mother?
My name's Ahir and I'm from Freud.
That's niche.
That is niche. Well done, though. You've really hit that one person in the audience. They are loving you. The musicians, van ladies and gentlemen, are here! Right. Now, to well and truly get this party started, we're going to have to bring out our beautiful lady. The giggle there was nothing to listen to. Are you ready to meet our bachelorette? Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think you understand the gravity of this situation. Are you ready to meet the bachelorette? Yeah! Good. She's so lucky. Ladies and gentlemen, release the lady! Take a seat. I'll hold that for you. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Are you excited?
I'm nine parts gin.
So, beautiful lady, what's your name and where'd you come from?
My name is Kate and I'm from Cardiff.
Kate from Cardiff, everyone! She's travelled. She's travelled
so
for this. Are you aware of how to play blind date? You literally haven't seen the gentleman behind the curtain, have you?
No.
None of them are the wizard. although one of them could be. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask... I'll let you guess which one. We're going to ask the questions. Are you okay?
Yeah, fine.
I'm sort of worried for you. In a caring, gay best friend kind of a way.
That's fine.
Although you really shouldn't be with him. So are you ready to shoot straight onto the questions?
I think so.
So let's do question number one.
All right, question one. Even by my standards, this is a lame way to be spending Valentine's night. If your career was going better, where would you be instead?
What a lovely way to start, demeaning them from the off. That is brilliant. And that's to number one, number one.
I'm really sorry. I feel bad now.
That's all right. I don't really see my love life as a career. What then? Right, Kate?
Hello.
Is that all?
Kate, you lie to you. Recession, Goldman Sachs, 2008, right? I'm 25, Kate. Not gonna lie to you, 25. You alright with that?
Yeah, it's absolutely great. It's lovely.
It's alright. Still live at home with my parents. Let me tell you something, Kate. I don't know if you live with your parents.
No, right. I don't.
You never get used to hearing your mum piss, do you?
No.
Thank you, number one. Thank you, number one. If I could describe her face to you right now, you wouldn't be happy. Same question to number two.
Well, actually, this is what I would do. I have a picture of me feeding a baby because that's the caring man that I am. It's a true it's a picture of me feeding a baby.
Is that actually a picture of you feeding a baby?
Why do you have a picture?
Me feeding a baby.
He's not breastfeeding, he's using a bottle. Oh, it's fine.
I could breastfeed if I wanted to. If you want to keep your figure, I can do it. I can do it.
Keith, I'm offering. Late for that.
He will
I would will myself to breastfeed that baby for you.
I know I'm meant to be holding this together, but I don't literally think I can. Thank you very much, number two. That was a beautiful, beautiful answer. The picture was, by the way, adorable. Yeah, totally adorable. I would have liked it on Facebook.
Okay.
We're not friends yet, though. We will be. I imagine I'll find him quite quickly. he's on a list.
I'm deleting my profile. So
number three, same question.
I feel as though if my career were going better, I would have invested quite heavily in a time machine to take me to a place... where we went bombarded by the corporatization of love. But I feel as though, you know, or at least a plane ticket to somewhere where a statement like that isn't painfully cliched. But, you know, we're in a situation where, I mean, we all have read the various anthropological studies which show that, like, commercialization of sex in non-human primates, we all know that. And we
yes.
all know...
You want to sleep
yeah,
with her, yeah?
We all know, yeah. We all know... We all know that the corporatization of love is an inevitable consequence of mature capitalism. And that is precisely the kind of statement which, in large part, means that my career is in the shitter. My career is in the shitter and no one fancies me. You really interrupted that punchline.
Do it again. Do it again.
Gentlemen, please.
We'll do it.
Isn't question time. I'll go Dimbleby on your ass.
Offside!
Please, he worked really hard to memorise all that shit. So, can he do it again?
By the way, he's a lot younger than you're imagining. that is amazing. Are you done, number three?
I'm very much done, yeah. Thank you.
It was beautiful. how are you feeling about numbers 1, 2, and 3 so far?
Next time the Comedy Festival asks me to do something, the answer's no.
No. I like you a lot.
You know how sometimes you read the Comedy Festival and they say, what we have is a mixed bill?
Yeah.
This is what they mean.
Right, great.
This is the pick and mix at Wilco's version of a comedy night. And we have filled our bowl to the brim.
You certainly have.
Oh, you're a lucky lady.
You know what? Fuck you. You deserve... Fuck you. Who the fuck
Number
you
one.
Are?
Are you ready for the second question? Guys, I'm on your side too. All right, question two.
Richard III famously had a humped back. If you were dug up from under a car park in 800 years' time, what would be your most noticeable bodily feature?
Well, beautiful. I'll give you a chance to figure out what she asked, and we'll go straight to number two, please.
Well, I imagine that spending 800 years under... the weight of a car park would make me flat. Which is quite unusual, I think. And pretty cool. so I'll be flat. And actually, I kind of have a hump back as well. It's just very low, so it's just the big ass, really.
Thank you very much, number two. Number three, same question, and reminding you that this is a 1.5 hour show that we are 1.5 hours into.
Right. I think it's actually interesting. This has happened to me over the last week. My most noticeable feature would be the fact that I've had Joseph Schumpeter's Capitalism, Socialism, and Democracy kind of tattooed onto my bones. No, I've basically had the words "Can we please shut up about Richard III" surgically engraved onto my rib cage, like a kind of cynical Wolverine being coated in the adamantium of frustration. By which I of course mean that my most noticeable feature would be the kind of remaining outline of the fleshy substance of my erect penis. Inevitably, like a stunned victim of Pompeii, it would be that, which is how I describe all of my erections.
Thank you, number three.
I
lucky
call
lady.
It Vesuvius.
Can I just let you know, he is off book. Like, he's literally all out of his head. This is amazing. Same question to number one.
If you ever need a red carpet, my foreskin is, not lying to you. I'm genuinely not lying. Right? I was on, I'm not lying. NHS Durrett. I was on the phone earlier on today, right? About 3:30. Fourth in the queue. All right. 10 to 3, Mr. Sharma, Clinic D, Lanesborough Wing, St. George's Hospital, Tooting, Tuesday, 26th of Feb, circumcision.
Me too.
Is that all, number one?
Yep. What more do you want? Jesus Christ!
Thank you very much.
What, do you actually want it to happen here, live? Let's cut my foreskin off and she can wear it as a hat! Or like one of those, you know, bands.
Silly enough to deal with this shit.
Your arm.
Thank you, love.
What else could you wear a foreskin as? That's to contestant number four over there.
What would you wear a foreskin as?
I've never actually thought of that before. Blimey, it would depend how big the foreskin was, I suppose.
Fucking huge!
Actually, I think you can wear it on your finger. That's a cock ring, you know?
That was a joke, ladies and gentlemen. That was good. That was awesome.
That's a pun right
well,
there.
That was a beautiful pun. Well done. Let's hear your third question.
Question three. I notably once finished last in a triathlon. How could you help me to come first? Oh, God.
And that question goes to number three.
Right. Well, before I begin, I think I'm probably going to de-jumper before I begin, because
yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah,
it's very it's very warm here, and I just want to ensure that everyone's got tickets to the gun show that's evidently happening before you. So
it's a BB gun.
I mean, yeah, a potato gun, even. So, I mean, I think that success on triathlon is probably largely dependent on a nutritional regime and appropriate personal trainers. And while I am not capable of providing either of those things, I mean, I suppose I could intensively Google in an endeavour to bring those things to you. However, I have detected a slightly cheeky subtext to what you've said. You know, I feel that there is a innuendo available in your question. Please forgive me if I've misunderstood your line of questioning. However, if the subtext of your question is indeed how I would ensure that you were brought to orgasm at least once prior to the advent of my own completion... I personally, just to be on the safe side, would suggest your use of something with bells and whistles and lights and vibrations while I was removed a safe distance away, principally because at the nascent stages of a sexual relationship, I feel that I would in no way know the idioms of your body in any way near a way that you would, of course. And, you know, that's...
Jesus Christ!
You know, I just think that while sexually speaking I do back myself, disappointment is a constant risk and must be avoided. So, yes, that's what I would suggest, my own removal from the situation. to ensure kind of orgiastic wonder. There we have it.
Jesus, wow. Well done. What he's essentially saying is...
You'd leave me to it.
He'd leave you to it.
And then it'll be like...
then it'll be like fucking in Carter 95. That's what's happening. So same question to number one.
I've been on... been on Google. Right, listen up! Kate, listen up, Kate. Right. When the nipples are stimulated,
not talking about your nipples now. Shut up.
Oxytocin is released, right? Which causes the same uterine and vagina contradictions associated with orgasm. Says Objin Christiane Northrup, MD, author of Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. This brings more blood flow to the genitals and can trigger an orgasm, apparently, right? And if that doesn't work, breathe on your neck, shove a courgette up your ass.
Thank you, number one. Finally, that third question to number two.
Yeah, well, I didn't even think about the whole sex thing. I was thinking about maybe, like, for the triathlon. I think I worked out a plan I'll come and support you doing the triathlon, and then I'll bring a tiger. And then I'd release the tiger so as to motivate you to be faster.
Thank you, number two. That's amazing. Now, that may sound like hyperbole, but I can imagine him carrying a tiger. I think he definitely knows a man who owns a tiger and is hungry. Now, we've heard the questions, we've had the answers. I think it's time for a recap from R. Graham. Don't you agree? So, ladies and gentlemen, please, let's listen to R. Graham tonight, played by the wonderful Ben Shires.
Well, Kate, will it be contestant number one? That's R. John from Streatham. He thinks love isn't hard work, unlike listening to his mum piss. Will you let him roll out his red carpet? And does one circumcise fit all? If you're not afraid to dip your oxytocin, this raging river of a man might just make you wet. Or will it be contestant number two? That's our Valdemar from Copenhagen. He's the Great Dane with the soft heart who'll sacrifice his tits for yours and has junk in the trunk to boot, even after a car park burial. Go get him, Tiger. Or will it be contestant number three? That's our Ahir from the Freudian School of Pretension. And he's got BB guns and a nutritional plan with your name all over it. After all, if you've got the whistle, he's got the bell.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Shires! Well, Kate. Kate, the top... Being heckled by theme music. Kate, the time has come now. You have to pick one.
Gosh.
And the audience are going to help.
One.
Who do you think she should pick?
One.
That is a melange. Stop. Shush. Right now, let's find out. Kate.
Yes.
Have you had enough time to think?
Yes, I think I have.
Have you had enough to drink?
Nothing like enough to drink.
So, first of all, let's say who you're not going to date. Would you like to eliminate your first bachelor? This is going to hurt.
It is. I didn't know how to do this.
You do have to do this. It's cruel.
Scylla didn't do this.
She fucking did.
She fucking did.
She killed them as well.
Okay.
That's why she hasn't been on telly in a while.
Bored them to death. Okay.
It's 20 past 10, yeah? Do you want to... It's Valentine's night, you know? I've got places to be, right?
No, you haven't. That's why you're here. Kate, who are you going to get rid of first?
Number two, I'm afraid.
Oh, my... Seriously? I've lost money on this. Ladies and gentlemen, we are kicking away Valdemar from Denmark. Come say goodbye to Kate. Stand up. Just stand up next to here. Oh, Kate, this is who you said goodbye to. This Viking of a man. Valdemar. Oh, Kate. I told you you'd fucking like Valdemar. I put money on Valdemar. You've really left it to those two. Amazing. Which one are you getting rid of next? I honestly... No, this is fucking anybody's guess now. Come on. Is this how you make all your dating decisions? Because you've thrown away a good one. Come on, right.
Can I have another go? No,
who you can get now? One or three? Who's it going to be?
Number three.
You going to get rid of number three? Ladies and gentlemen, Ahir! You're out! Come on, say goodbye to Ahir. Oh, say goodbye. Kate. No! I fucking love you! Kate, right now. If we had a budget, there would be a polyback wall. But what's going to happen is they're both just going to step forward and look at each other. You picked number one, which was John from Streatham. And if you'd just seen him, this is like probably the best thing about Blind Date ever. If you'd just seen him previously, you definitely would not have picked one. But now, not so bad. He's bought a new shirt. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your blind date. John, meet Kate! I am. This is amazing. This is John Kearns. He is a comedian. And
Crumbling Cookies, 7:30 Sunday.
Kate, how do you feel with your choice?
I don't think I've ever been so thrilled in my life.
Oh! John, how are you enjoying? Kate.
Do you know what? No, seriously, fuck the lawyer. Because the thing is, right? Love is innate. It's blind. Excuse me.
And fortuitously deaf.
I like her already, I'm not going to lie.
Ladies and gentlemen, I didn't expect it to happen like this, but I think we've actually found a match. This is amazing.
You and me, yeah?
No. Make shed loads of noise for Ahia, for Valdemar, for John, for Ben Shires, our Graham, for the wonderful Kate. My name's David Morgan. I've been Cilla Black. You've been fucking awesome. Good night. Goodbye.
Well, as the dust settles and John and Katie go off on what one can only assume will be the start of the kind of relationship that will transcend the ages or land one of them in prison, it's time to say goodbye once again from Leicester. We'll have more comedy for you next Wednesday in our final festival instalment. And as always, don't forget to iTunes us, tweet us at @join_Dave and me at Ben Shires and all the other malarkey on the internet too. Till then, toodles doodles. The Dave Weekly is a Pixiu production for Dave, hosted by me, Ben Shires, and produced by Joel Porter.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What
is
I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising person.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.